now it's time for Rod and Reel Radio with your hosts, Hop Along John Cassidy, fresh and saltwater expert angler Stan Vanderberg, and all-around outdoors fishing and hunting enthusiast Wendy Toshihara. If you love the outdoors, enjoy salt or freshwater fishing, this is the show for you. We'll cover most all of the fishing tournaments and events with special reports while providing you with the information you need as to how and where to experience the best fishing opportunities in Southern California, Baja, Alaska, or just about anywhere the fish are biting. We have some fantastic guests and reports lined up for you this evening, so sit back, relax, and get ready for the fastest 2 hours in radio. It's all right here, right now, on Rod and Reel Radio, the best stop on your radio dial for all the information you need for fishing opportunities all over the United States. Now here's your host, Hop Along, John Cassidy.
Well, thank you, Mark Larson, and welcome all of Southern California to another Sunday edition of Rod and Reel Radio. I am indeed your underfished host, Hop Along John Cassidy, and it is our pleasure to welcome you to tonight's show. And man, we have a great show lined up for you tonight. You know, this show is freshwater, saltwater fishing. We cover people in the industry, and yeah, sometimes we even get into the politics of what's happening. But, we try and mix it up for you, for your listening pleasure. Tonight, I've got to tell you, the whole orientation of the show is going to be towards freshwater bass fishing. And the reason for that is we were able to catch up with two of the most dynamic bass anglers in the country right now. It isn't that often that the stars align that we can do this, because these fishermen are off fishing tournaments, they're on the road, they're doing promotions, all that type of stuff. But we were able to catch up with them tonight. I booked them, and they are going to be with us this evening live. Let me tell you who we are talking about. You know, just this last Wednesday, the 2022 One Bass U.S. Open was conducted on Lake Mojave. This is an event that has been going on since the early 1970s. Traditionally, it has been on Lake Mead. But over the years, what has happened, obviously, you've been keeping track of the news. Water level at Lake Mead has been going down. The past couple of years, it's been very difficult to run this event out of Lake Mead because of the lower water levels. Just no facilities to launch at. So during the middle of this past year, Billy Egan made the agonizing decision to change the location of the U.S. Open because WN knew that this event was steeped in tradition. Lake Mead had been the home of this event. You know, this event is older than the Bassmaster Classic. But he made the decision to change it to Lake Mojave, got everything together, put up one heck of a show. They had a great tournament there. It ended last Wednesday. And we're going to have the winner of the 2022 One Bass U.S. Open with us tonight, Mr. Josh Bertram. So Josh is going to be our first guest right after the introductions. And then later on, I told you that we had another really dynamic freshwater fisherman. This is a lady angler. She won the Hobie Kayak Open Classic last year. She qualified for the World Championships that were in Poland, I believe. That's when we last talked to her. We're going to catch up with her and find out how those championships went. We have also, she also has fished an entire season in the Hobie Kayak Series again this year. Out of 200 entries per tournament, she came in second in the Angler of the Year this year. So she beat out a lot of women and a lot of men to do it. She has qualified for this year's Hobie Kayak Open Championships. It's Christine Fisher. So we will have Bass Hobie Kayak Fishing Champion Christine Fisher with us in the second round. But before we get to our first guest, let me introduce to you my co-host for Rod and Reel Radio. First, this gentleman is the voice of 1-800-BASS-BOAT. Pretty darn good fresh and saltwater angler in his own right. It's Mr. Stan Vandenberg. Stan, how you doing tonight, sir?
Alive and well, John. Hey, Wynn and everybody. I'm now I'm done with the tournaments, but I'm getting ready here. I've got the end of the month. I leave an 11-day trip. I've got a charter that I run every year. So getting ready to go for big dogs for 11 days down south and see if we can find that bigger yellowfin. If not, come back up and play with the big bluefin. But, you know, I can't wait for tonight's show. And we heard we got Bertrand on. I mean, I don't know that I had a chance to fish against him, but, you know, I've fished against the rest of the crew out here in the West and fished the Open and finished fourth behind Aaron. And then next year I had him, I thought, the last day, and my troll motor broke. So we were sitting boat to boat, and he goes, "I'm out of fish." I go, "Well, I'm going to catch him for you." And my troll motor broke. He still won. But the fact that that was on Lake Mead, and Lake Mead's been such a equalizer of the fishing tournaments for years and years and years and years and years. And then switching to Mojave, I mean, Mojave's got a huge pass with the big largemouth bass, and now the transfer to the smallmouth. I mean, that was a lake where Bobby Garland came to Paul Cormany and I with his hands open and put these two pieces of baits in our hand. We're looking at it. What do you do? That was the first Garland jig. So going back through the history of how the lake has transformed now into even Havasu and Mojave into that bigger fishery with the smallmouth, I can't wait to pick his mind and find out a little bit about the transformation he's made in his fishing style for these big smallmouth. So this is going to be cool.
That's going to be cool, Stan. You know, I fished that tournament. I fished that lake in the 80s. Didn't fish anything like it's fishing right now. And you're right. You used to go after some largemouth, especially up in the river. But it took very small weights to win that event. And truthfully, a lot of tournament circuits stayed away from Lake Mojave. As I know I ran a tournament for Western Outdoor News. It was a pro-am event in 2010 with Harvey Naslin. And it took very small weights to win this. So in the past 10 or 12 years, that lake has transformed. So we will be talking with Josh Bertram, and we'll find out his take on that lake. But before we do that, let me introduce to you the other co-host of Rod and Reel Radio. She is the National Sales Manager for Isoline, represents many other fine products in the fishing industry. She is also an expert fisherman and hunter, and she is also a commercial fisherman. Let's introduce you all to Wendy Toshihara. Wendy, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. Got to work in the garden all day long today and been eating a lot of fresh picked vegetables. And of course, took my boy Gage out on Friday, and he found four of the 600 of the six chuckers we planted for him. So we're having chucker for dinner.
How old is your dog now?
He's five.
5 months or 5 years?
Oh, 5 years old.
5 years old. Then he ought to be a pretty good hunting dog by now.
Yeah, I don't have time to take him out. So, but the last 2 months I've been taking him out every week. And we've been hunting over at the Etiwanda Game Association with one of my good friends, Doug from Leadmaster.
Perfect.
All right. Hey, guys, we have our first guest waiting. Let's don't spend any more time leaving him on hold. This guy is actually a phenomenon. He was a three-day leader in the 2022 One Bass U.S. Open at Lake Mojave. I don't know if there's anyone that's been a back-to-back leader every day and winds up winning in the tournament. Sometimes being the leader after the first day isn't necessarily the position you want to be in. This year it worked out really well for this gentleman. Let me introduce our Southern California audience to Josh Bertrand. Josh, congratulations and welcome to Rod and Reel Radio.
Hey, thanks. Thanks so much. I appreciate y'all having me on.
It is indeed a pleasure. Now, Josh, we have over the years we've seen your name in the standings. I know you fished a lot of the One Bass Open and a lot of the other events locally in your area. But you know, you're not a name that comes up all the time when it comes to fishing Lake Mojave or Mead or whatever it is. give us just a brief rundown on your fishing experiences and how did you get to where you were just before you entered the U.S. Open at Lake Mojave?
Yeah, sure. So, I live in central Arizona, just outside of Phoenix in Queen Creek. And, I've been fishing tournaments. I'm 34 now, and I've been fishing tournaments for most of my life. I have fished several U.S. Opens, but really a lot of my experience has come over the past dozen years fishing back east. You know, I qualified for the Bassmaster Elite Series about 11 years ago. I fished that for 6 or 7 years, and the last 4 years I've been fishing the Major League Fishing Bass Pro Tour. A lot of tournament experience, but, as far as the stuff out west goes, I'm not home most of the year. So when it comes to like fishing a lot of the Toyota Series and then some of the other one bass tournaments, I'm just gone. So, I don't get over to Clear Lake much. I don't get over to the Delta. I'll cherry pick some tournaments at Havasu. But really the Open is the one chance I get to come fish against all my buddies out west once a year, because typically the tours back east are wrapped up, and it's my chance to come fish with my buds and have one crack at a tournament in my home state.
Josh, wow. You've got knowledge of the river lakes. You fished them a bunch and without a doubt, spent some time on Havasu and Mojave and Mead. Being that did you fish the club circuits or did you fish the team events and then get involved with some of the pro events on the lakes, obviously, before you got involved with the Bass Pro Series and then moved back into, especially getting involved and invited into Major League Fishing.
I was fish really eaten up with fishing at a young age. I think I fished my first tournament at like 13, and I was a really competitive kid, and tournament fishing was just, man, I went crazy for it. So I fished tons of team tournaments, fished the Federation. Now living in central Arizona, I had a lot to fish without even having to go as far as the Colorado River. So, fishing as a youngster and a young adult, I fished a lot of the Phoenix area stuff. So lakes like Roosevelt and Pleasant. Saguaro Canyon, those lakes.
Alamo, Saguaro, yeah.
Yeah, it's a 4-hour drive to get to Havasu. It's almost over 5 to Mead, almost 5 to Mojave. So, I've got a lot of experience at Havasu. I fish a lot of tournaments at Havasu. But what's funny is Mojave, and you guys had alluded to how it's really a lake that's come on a lot more recently, especially with the boom of the smallmouth. But there was a long stretch where there weren't very many major tournaments at Mojave. And that stretch was really as I was kind of cutting my teeth. So you guys might be surprised, but my first visit to Mojave was for 2 days this summer in July. And that was my only experience before this tournament started, other than the official practice.
Really?
Yep.
Okay. Now I gotta pick your brain a little bit here. So what month were you on Mojave?
I was there in July. I went right after 4th of July. As soon as the crowds left, I think I went for 2 days during the middle of the week, that following week.
That's
just to
one,
get a look
one
at
good
it,
thing
because
about
I'd never
that
been is there. And I knew that I had a busy September and October coming up travel fishing. And I thought, man, I better at least get a look at this thing because it's a notoriously windy lake. It's even though I had never fished it, all my buds that spend a lot of time out there, it's notorious, had told me it's notorious for being extremely rough and windy, even on days when the lakes above and below aren't. It's just down in that valley and it just blows out there. So what happens is you leave yourself 3 or 4 days to practice and it gets, and just say the forecast is ugly and it's windy 2 or 3 days, you don't get much of a practice. So I wanted to lay my eyes on it at least when I knew the weather was going to be stable.
Fishing out of Catherine's Landing like you guys were, that's at the bottom end of the lake by the dam.
Yep.
It's a lot of steeper rocky wall in that end of the lake, and then it breaks out into the big basin. And the big basin is when it gets windy, that's the nastiest part of the lake for sure. Because it blows right back at you and it's a mess trying to get over those big waves. But did you find fish when you went there in July?
Did you travel up above the basin and then fish your way back to find out, you know, what these fish were doing? Because normally that summer bite stays through October. Kind of that fish doesn't move that much. At least you can find areas where that fish moves and you can go back and forth and travel that, because the smallmouth they'll regroup on an area. You know, you'll catch one or two and come back in a couple hours later, and sometimes you can catch more. I don't know how that worked, but we're going to find out from you. But how did you find that in July?
Yeah, you know, it's so my main goal then was just to, I mean, it's a decent sized lake. So I really wanted to just, more than anything, lay my eyes on all of it and see what the different water colors looked like everywhere. See, like you talked about, how the lower end is steeper and then it flattens out and it gets steeper again. I wanted to see the lay of the land, what it had to offer, where the grass grew, where there was no grass. There's artificial habitats that have been put in the lake by the, game and fish on both sides. So I wanted to just do a lot of graphing and looking around. And then I fished just as, you know, to break up the boredom. You know, I mean, I've done a lot of these pre-practice trips over the years where you drive the boat around, and it's fun to drive your boat around, but you can only do it so much before you get bored. So I fished to, break up the boredom. And, but it's very interesting how you mentioned that you feel like the bite with a smallmouth can sometimes last all the way through October. And I really, the places that I did get bit on were still productive when I came back this time. And we had a real late summer, real late summer. I mean, it's just now here in Phoenix. Today's like the first cool day we've had. And it's been hot down at Mojave way later than even normal. So it was a straight up summer bite, which is wild for October to me.
Hey, Josh, we got to take a commercial break. Josh, can I ask you to stay with us a little bit longer here? Because,
absolutely,
man, there are still 100 questions we need to ask and get the info out.
You're not going anywhere, man. We got to talk.
All right. Hey, we have Josh Bertram on with us. He is the 2022 One Bass Open champion that was just conducted on Lake Mojave, finished up this past Wednesday. So this is all current information. So stay tuned. Stan, Wendy, and I with Josh Bertram will be back after these messages.
Hi, Roland Martin here. I'd like to tell you a little about Gary Yamamoto and the Gary Yamamoto Custom Bait Company. It all started with an idea, then a dream, and in 1983, the Gary Yamamoto Custom Bait Company was formed. If you know Gary Yamamoto like I do, and I've known him since 1983, you know he has a passionate love for the sport of fishing. That love is only matched by his obsession to design and produce the highest quality soft-plastic fishing lures on the market today. Every bait Gary makes is inspected by hand. Today, more than 2.5 million packages of bait are shipped worldwide. On behalf of Gary and his staff, he wants to thank his customers for thinking so highly of his products and wishing you the great success of the sport of fishing. Whether you fish for fun or fish the tournament circuits like I do, you'll honor Gary for making Gary Yamamoto Custom Baits a key part of your fishing experience. Take it from me, Roland Martin. When I'm in need of a go-to bait, my first choice is a Gary Yamamoto Custom Bait.
Turner's Outdoorsman, California's number one fishing, hunting, and shooting sports retailer, now has 28 locations. Turner's is your one-stop shop for fishing tackle, hunting gear, and everything for shooting sports. Turner's offers a full selection and unmatched prices on the gear you need. Whether you're planning a fishing trip with the family or chasing giant tuna, Turner's highly skilled staff will make sure you have the gear for your next adventure. Visit Turners.com to find a Turner store near you, and be sure to join the Turner's Discount Club to get weekly ads and specials right to your inbox. Turner's Outdoorsman, your one-stop shop for all your fishing needs.
The perfect day is my family and I on the boat out on the waterway. I love it. Nothing but sun, snacks, fishing, and of course, life jackets for everyone. Save the ones you love. Life jackets save lives. A message from California State Parks Division of Boating and Waterways.
Since being established in 2015, CCA has achieved great success for the entire sport fishing industry in the fight for our right to fish here in California. 2021 brought us plenty of success, but every year brings new battles, and we need your help. one of the best ways to help support CCA Cal is to join us and become a member, because strength is certainly in our numbers. Become a member today by logging on to joincca.org. Membership starts at $35 per year, and that is one of the best ways to help us while you go fishing.
Hi, this is Lori Heath. You may know me from some of the fishing boats out of San Diego. I want to talk to you about something that's really close to my heart. Did you know that when you donate blood, you're not only helping others, you're also helping yourself? Donating blood lowers the risk of heart attacks in men by more than 70%, lowers the risk of developing cancer, and helps you maintain a healthy liver. So donate blood to help someone else and to help yourself. If you can't donate, you can still make a difference with the financial gift. It's the best way to give back. Hook, line, and sinker. And for more information and to make a financial donation or an appointment, visit sandiegobloodbank.org. That's the sandiegobloodbank.org. And just to let you know, I'm also a blood donor.
The warm weather is here and our lakes and rivers are brimming. Just remember, if you love California and you love to boat, please wear your life jacket and make sure everyone with you puts one on too. Save the ones you love. A message from California State Parks Division of Boating and Waterways.
Hey, Stan, Wendy, and I, we want to welcome you back to Rod and Reel Radio. Our special guest this hour is winner of the 2022 One Bass U.S. Open on Lake Mojave, Josh Bertram. And Josh, again, thank you for being with us this evening.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Having a good time.
Yo, for sure, Josh. Hey, before we get into the nitty-gritty on just exactly what you did, when Billy Egan made the announcement that the U.S. Open was going to be moving from Lake Mead to Lake Mojave, how did you receive that information? Was this something that said, hey, this is an event I really want to be in? Did it really make any difference to you or what?
You know, for me, I was actually pretty excited about it. You know, if I just, I love fishing for smallmouth and spotted bass, but there's something really special about smallmouth to me. And, you know, just looking at my track record of fishing, for whatever reason, I've done specifically well on smallmouth, and I can't really pinpoint it, but I've made more money smallmouth fishing than anything else. So my initial reaction was like, hey, that's pretty sweet that we're going to be able to go really target smallmouth. Whereas at Mead, I don't think it's ever been one on all smallmouth, you know, and there's a lot of smallmouth in that lake and they do play, but you know, I just thought it was going to be a fun opportunity to go fish for big smallmouth. And, you know, the bass, they're twice the size they are in Mead. So, you know, I love Lake Mead. It's a special lake. And I really do hope at one point we get to go back there for the U.S. Open. I want to see that lake, you know, obviously flourish just like everyone else out west does. And, you know, it's been in a tough spot lake level wise the last couple of years. But, Mojave was a cool change of pace. And I mean, it's just anytime you can go fish for, you know, 3 to 5 pound smallmouth all day, it's one of the funnest things you can do as a bass angler.
And the right. Cool part about Mojave is it's grown to where that you got to have a 20 pound bag if you're going to be in the competition on your team tournament, one day events and whatever else. So when we were talking with the grip load of guys that I'm in contact with in the industry, you know, and they were asking me, I go, it's going to be a local, somebody like you or Justin Kerr, or Klinger, one of the boys that knows the lake and has a little bit more knowledge, although I didn't know you'd only spent 2 days on the thing.
Josh, you know, you were telling Stan that you'd only spent, you know, part of the summer on there, and Stan was making reference to that sometimes the patterns stay the same. So let's go into your pre-fish. Did you find the same type of pattern and the same fish when you were fishing now here in October that you found during the summer? And as I understand it, from a lot of the fishermen I talked to that were pre-fishing there, you were awful quiet because of the fact that these guys knew that they thought you were on fish. So tell us really what the story was.
Yeah. You know, My goal every practice is to not get too locked in onto one thing, you know, because I've been burned so many times by you have a great first day of practice and you say, okay, I'm putting all my chips in on this pattern. And of course, something changes and you just spent your entire practice working on one pattern, not developing multiple things in case it does change, right? So my goal in practice was to fish shallow and deep and do a lot of both. That way I had multiple options when the tournament came around. And I pretty much stuck to that, and I had more success when I would go out deep, but I kept going back and forth because I knew, hey, one day this forecast is going to change, the wind's going to blow 20 miles an hour, and it's going to be real hard to go dangle my drop shot out in 30 feet of water in 4-foot waves, you know? So I was ready to go shallow, but to your point, it was when I would go out deep, I saw a lot of similarities to my initial trip out there in July, and I had more success out there. So when the tournament rolled around, I wanted to at least start out there, and I was ready to make adjustments. I had top waters tied on, swim baits. I had an Alabama rig ready to go, but I didn't need any of it. It was drop shot from the start to the finish when the actual tournament started. And you know, I had a pretty good feeling after practice that I was around some fish. But again, you just, in tournament fishing, there's so many wild cards, you never know what's going to happen. So a lot of times when I have a real mediocre practice, I feel the best because I'm real flexible. It's real easy to make a pivot or make a move if you have to. But when you have a great practice, it's really hard to let go what you were catching fish on earlier in the week. And, you know, luckily for me in this case, I didn't have to let it go, and it lasted all week, which is a rarity.
Wow. You know, understanding how the river works and the fish there, they can be in that 6 inches of water and shallow. But the one thing about the river lakes, for people that are listening, you can see 30 feet down in Mojave and pick pebbles. It is gin clear a lot of the lake, and you have to fish on the river lakes. You have to fish sometimes the shadow line of where it breaks off where you can't see.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, you know, the cheap and easy fish, the shallow fish are caught easily the first 2 days. And after that, the third day is really the tough side of the tournament to be able to put a consistent large limit in the boat. You almost have to be able to pick away in that deeper water. So how deep were you fishing? How deep did you find your fish?
Yeah, you know, it was one of those things. I didn't have like a magic depth. I fished from really 20 to 40. And as the week went on, and you're right about it being really clear, I will say that we had the monsoon season was so epic this year in the Southwest that the lake had more color in it than normal. And I think a lot of it was just residual from runoff, you know, from up above in the system. But it was still 10 to 12 foot visibility, which is still clear. But I think that kept some of the fish from being even in like 40 to 50. You know, because it was a little dingier than normal, but, you know, deeper was better, especially later in the day. Early in the morning, you could get away with fishing a little shallower, but once that sun got up, we didn't hardly have any wind throughout the course of the week. And when it's just glass calm, bluebird conditions and clear water like that, a lot of times you have to go deep.
Yep. Yeah. Especially on the river fish.
Go Josh, ahead. You yeah, know, sure. We had Justin Kerr on in March after he won the U.S. Laughlin Open there in Lake Mojave. He won it with 68 pounds, great bag. Was the feeling of yourself and the other fishermen, and even during the pre-fish, that it might take 20 pounds a day to win this event? Because there hadn't been any major tournaments this late in the season on Mojave in the past, so what was the general consensus of opinion that you ran across?
Yeah, I think everyone wondered if you could catch 20 a day. We certainly knew it was in the lake. I mean, yeah, looking at what Justin did in that April tournament was unbelievable. And just the quality of the bags that went all the way down the list, you know, on the leaderboard at that tournament. I didn't fish it, but I looked at it. And, I mean, you're talking about a tournament that was held at prime time when the fishing is going to be its very best. So that shows what a lake has in it. And it showed that you can catch 20 a day, but no one knew because, yeah, you're right. There have been no major tournaments held in October. The water was dropping. These fish aren't used to this type of pressure. There were a lot of factors that would make it tough. So my guess going in was it would probably take a little under 60 pounds, probably 55 or something. So I definitely even surprised myself that it ended up taking over 20 a day for sure.
Well, the one cool thing, I get to talk to lots of the guys out here in the West because of the business, but the guys were going, you know, somebody said that, you know, it's going to take 20 pounds a day, but they didn't believe it. They were fishing tournament. We won't talk about who was, but they didn't find the fish. And we were talking, I go, oh, somebody's going to get on that and it'll be there for them. You just got to stick with where those fish are and continually fish for them. Did you have an area that you could go back and forth, you know, to maybe two or three or four areas and then the fish would reload on, or was it just new places every day?
That's a great question. I think with less pressure, you could have easily done that, but the pressure was so intense with the amount of
185 boats, by the way, so the people didn't know.
Yeah. So, and it's a big lake, but again, we talked about that water dropping and how tough the shallow bite was. That pulled everyone off the bank. I mean, even if a guy went into the beginning of the tournament wanting to fish shallow, by the middle of the second day, he's out offshore fishing deep, and any lake's going to feel that pressure. So, you know, I think if there was a 50-boat, one-day tournament, you could have easily just gone back to the same places over and over, you know, catch one or two, leave, come back. But, you know, you had to just take what you could and move on and not get married to certain places, because when they were gone, they were gone. I mean, if you had a point that had a little wad of five fish on it, I mean, those fish got caught the first day of the tournament and they were gone. So, you know, for me, and I try to do this when I'm at Havasu, it worked really well here in Mojave, is I try to take the easiest ones first. Which you talked about, the easy shallow ones, but I go to the most obvious places first that other guys are going to find, take all the easy pickings that are going to get caught, and then anything I find that's a little more subtle or sneaky, I try my best to save it for later in the tournament, and that's what I did.
You know, Josh, when we talked to Justin, he gave a lot of kudos to his backseater because the one tournaments are shared weight format, and you're telling us with a lot of experience you have, you've not done a lot of shared weight. Maybe in Bass West you have done some, but how did the share weight, if at all, help you in the first 2 days of this event?
It was great. I mean, it was, I really love that format. The Billy's got there, and I had three great partners, just super cool guys. Each one of them caught one bass that went into our bag, which is critical. It's huge. And the
you
style
bet.
Of fishing I was doing a lot of looking at my electronics, looking at live scope, and that's hard for the guy in the back, you know, but these guys fish really hard. They contributed both with their fishing rod and just by being good partners, right? And having a good attitude, which is everything. You know, you get a partner in the boat that's got a bad attitude, it can ruin your whole day. These three guys fish so hard. And then Mike, on the last day, Mike Crothers, he was a great guy because he's got a lot of tournament fishing experience. I know him from the Phoenix area. And, you know, it was the toughest of the 3 days for me to get bit. The lake had just been pounded. I had a lot of pressure from being the leader. And, you know, he just helped keep me cool. So, you know, it's great to have a partner in, you know, just that is down for the cause to fish hard and, you know, help get it done.
So you kind of referred to on the first day, you went to all the obvious places where you could catch fish, where you're fishing in the below the basin, in the basin, above the basin. And on the second day, how did you change your format as opposed to day one?
Yeah, I just, you know, the first and second days went pretty well, both of them. You know, I took the places where I knew the most guys were fishing and made those the places I need to fish first, get them before anyone else can. And then the places where they weren't so obvious, if you were to look at the map and say, you know, there's places on that lake where you could look at the map and say, I promise you there's a bass that lives there. And there's some places that it's pretty subtle and you have to really fish around to find it. So I went to the obvious ones first, caught what I could both of the first 2 days. And then I had to use a couple places that I had saved from the first day on the second day. And then of course the last day, all bets are off. You're fishing everything that you've got, everything you can. And it's a free for all.
So how far up did you go with it? Above Cottonwood and, you know, the power lines down, how far up did you go?
I pretty much fished from Cottonwood down. I went up near it a couple times, but pretty much fished from there down. And I didn't, again, it would go in waves. Like when you're fishing a tournament with that much pressure, you know, 1 minute there'll be a section of the lake that seems empty, and then you blink and there's 15 boats around you. And vice versa. There'll be an area that you drive by, there's 15 boats there, and then you drive back by an hour later and there's no one there. So I tried to keep pretty open mind and I moved around a lot and hit a lot of spots just trying to have good timing. You know, you might have a good place that had, they had some fish, but if you pull in right behind another boat, the fish aren't set up. They're still spooked off by that boat. Maybe they caught one, maybe they didn't. But if you've got a spot that hasn't been hit in an hour and a half and you can pull in there, you might be able to get one there. So I was really trying to move around a lot, not be too married to a certain section because
hey, Josh, because of the pressure. We got to take a commercial break again. This hour is going way too fast. Can we get you to stay on with us just a little bit longer?
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. I'm glad to.
Hey, we're speaking with Josh Bertram. He is the winner of the 2022 One Bass Open on Lake Mojave. We've already gone through like day one, day two. He was day one, day two leader of this event. After day two, he had 43.79 pounds. Amazing. How did Josh do in day three and where did he finish? We're going to find out, but you're going to have to wait till after these commercials. We'll be back right after.
Hi, this is Jim Trelekas. Whether you're an avid angler or custom rod builder like me, you need to team up with the leading innovator in rod building related products, Batson Enterprises. From rain shadow rod blanks, engineered by anglers for anglers, to quality rod components supplied by Alps and Forecast, Batson Enterprises will enhance the quality of your fishing and rod building experience. Batson Enterprises for many years has excelled in incorporating rod building technologies and techniques into every product sold. Owner Bill Batson has assembled one of the finest group of in-house professionals to assist you with your every rod building question or need. So take it from me, Jim Trelekas. When my customer's expectation is for me to build them the finest fishing rod their money can buy, I turn to Batson Enterprises for the best rod components my money can buy.
Hi. This is John, and I'd like to invite you to the new Angler's Arsenal location in Lakeside, California. We've put together a staff of experts that'll help you find the tackle and gear you need at a price you can afford. We carry all major brands, and if you need custom work done, we can do that for you with both rods and reels. How about servicing your old equipment? No problem. We can do it quickly, easily, at a price you can afford. We also do custom hand-poured plastics through Western Plastics. Design the lure of your dreams and catch the fish that have been getting away. So come and visit us in Lakeside. We're at 12255 Woodside Avenue. Or you can visit us at anglersarsenal.com. If you need to call us, we're at 619-466-8355. See you there.
Gamakatsu hooks are made from high-grade carbon steel specially heat-treated to make them light and extra strong but not brittle. The Gamakatsu sharpening process is the most modern in the world and results in a perfectly conical point that is unequaled in sharpness. Gamakatsu offers a huge variety of hooks for all types of fishing, drop shot, extra wide gap, worm hooks, finesse wide gap, and a lot more. Gamakatsu has a hook for whatever style of fishing you want to do. Don't waste your time on a cheap hook. Ask for Gamakatsu hooks at your favorite tackle store now.
There's nothing more peaceful than fishing. Just me, my pole, and some bait. Oh, and my life jacket, of course. I like fish, but I don't want to end up at the bottom of the water with them. Save the ones you love. A message from California State Parks Division of Boating and Waterways.
Are you looking for a quality fishing experience out of Cabo San Lucas for you, your family, and friends, but are a little set back with what charter company to choose? We urge you to use American and family-owned Lands End Charters. Lands End Charters offers their passengers affordable and all-inclusive services on a variety of vessels and trips. Fish with the latest of fishing gear while experiencing the hospitality of a long-time-owned family business. Go to LensandCharters.com to see all of their vessels and amenities available. Call Cobble, Greg, or Jenny at 800-281-5778 when you're ready for an action-packed Cabo fishing experience.
Hey, everybody. This is a message for our listeners from a new Baja Magic Lodge at Cedros Island. Cedros Outdoor Adventures wants to make your dream of fishing Cedros Island a reality. Want to go after giant calicos or yellowtail with the best Cedros Island fishing organization, but you just don't know who to contact? Then give Cedros Outdoor Adventures a call at 619-793-5419, or even better yet, log on to their informative website at cedrosoutdooradventures.com. There you can visit their trip calendar and schedule a trip that's convenient for you. Once again, the phone number is 619-793-5419, or their website of CedrosOutdoorAdventures.com.
Rod and Reel Radio is brought to you by BajaBound.com Insurance Services. Are you driving to Mexico? You can buy and print out your Mexican auto insurance policy online in the convenience of your own home or office in minutes now with BajaBound.com's easy-to-use website. After printing your auto insurance, check out the BajaBound.com site. There, too, you will find great travel tips and information to help you get the most out of your next road trip south of the border. So this is an important fact to remember. Use BajaBound.com. It's the easiest way to find and get Mexican auto insurance.
If you're serious about your fishing, choosing the right tackle is one of the most important decisions you'll ever make. Iserline makes premium fishing lines, including monofilament, Dacron, Spectra, fluorocarbon, battle-tested harnesses, and top angler-tested Iserline tools and accessories. Iserline premium fishing products are created to provide you with the ultimate in strength, dependability, durability, high abrasion resistance, low stretch, and high quality. All Iserline products are 100% guaranteed against manufacturing defects. You just can't buy better value. Iserline will replace or repair at their option, no questions asked, if you're not pleased with any of their products. Catch what you've been missing. Quality guaranteed.
Rod and Reel Radio is now available as a podcast you can subscribe to on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcasting app. Get notified as soon as new episodes are available, or go back and listen to our past shows. Browse through all of our archive shows at rodandreelradio.com/archives and click the subscribe button to get started listening now.
Hey, Stan, Wendy, and I, we welcome you back to Rod Reel Radio. Our special guest this hour is Josh Bertrand. He just came back from fishing the 2022 One Bass U.S. Open on Lake Mojave. We've gone through days one and two. Those are the first two tournament days he ever spent on Lake Mojave. How did he do? Stan, let's find out what he did on day three.
Okay, the elephant in the room right now is what were you throwing? you told us that you're doing a drop shot, and right now, you know, that type of thing, you're spot fishing. You are definitely not just fan casting for, you're usually, you know, you've got a spot that you know the fish could collect on, whatever it is, and you're target fishing. But what were you throwing on these fish, you know, and what colors were you throwing?
Yeah, thanks. And that's a good point. We better get to that before we have to get to the next test here. the same bait that I used to smallmouth fish all over the country. When I go up north to the Great Lakes or back east, the Berkeley flatworm is my go-to. That thing came out about 4 or 5 years ago, and that max scent is just unbelievable on smallmouth. I threw the 3.5-inch size and any green pumpkin shade. You know, I know a second place, Spencer was throwing it too, and I think he threw some other colors. So I don't, you know, personally, I think the color is the least important factor a lot of times on these smallmouth. It's more about the profile, the scent, and the presentation. But the color is something to pay attention to, of course, you know. So I threw like a straight green pumpkin, a green pumpkin watermelon laminate, green pumpkin party, which is like a green pumpkin candy. I just, whichever one was on the top, you know, I each morning I would give a bag to my AAA and you know, they would throw it as well. So that was exclusively what we threw on the drop shot with a 3/8 ounce weight. And, you know, just kind of really what's nice when you can simplify your bait selection is you can focus on everything else. You know, if you're not worried, well, will the fish bite this or will they bite something else? All you have to worry about is finding the fish. And that just simplifies it a lot. And you can't always do that, right?
What weight line?
This is a situation where you can't.
What weight line were you fishing?
Yeah, I was throwing a 8-pound braid from Berkley. It's Berkley X5 braid to a 6-pound trilene fluorocarbon leader. So pretty light line. You know, that trilene 6-pound is pretty strong 6-pound. So we didn't have any issues with those big smallmouth. But, you know, it's still anytime you're fighting a big smallmouth, it gets hairy. And, you know, it's part of smallmouth fishing. You lose a few. We lost one or two every day, but if you're getting 12 bites and losing one fish with those fish, you're doing pretty good.
Any hook selection first, you know, Gamagatsu,
Yeah, I like that number one Fusion 19 drop shot hook from Berkley. You know, it's just your standard drop shot, split shot style hook. You know, and I pretty much just stick to it. That's the same rig that I was fishing at Mille Lacs Lake 2 weeks ago in a Major League Fishing tournament. I was using it at Cayuga Lake 2 weeks before that. It's the same rig I take everywhere when I drop shot for smallies.
Do you have a preference for length from your hook to the weight?
Yeah, and that's a great question. For largemouth, I keep it short. I like it close to the bottom on largemouth when I'm fishing like a worm on a drop shot. I go like 10 inches. But for smallmouth, they're such sight feeders, and there's so much, and the water's so clear in a fishery like this, I make that leader longer. I go like at least a 2-foot leader, and that gets the bait up off the bottom where they can see it maybe from farther away. If they didn't happen to catch it on the way down, or even if they did, I don't want it blending in with the bottom. I want it up in plain sight when those fish get to the bait.
Right.
That,
hey, Josh,
that right there, people, is a key.
Josh, after the second day, you've got 43.79 pounds. You have led day one. You've led day two. You're going into day three. Do you feel like you still had spots to go? Were you going over your maps and your charts to figure out where you were going to go? Or what was your strategy for day three? Because as you said, a lot of pressure on the lake. A lot of fish had been caught. You had a lot of fishermen behind you. They were right on their tail. What was your strategy and what happened?
Yeah, you know, it was there was pressure on the lake and there's pressure on me, right? I mean, I've led some tournaments going into the final day, but never, you know, U.S. Open's so important to a Western fisherman. It was, you know, it was more important to me than a normal regular season tournament. So I was stressed, and I had a lead, and you know, it's a stressful place to be, but you'd rather be 4 pounds ahead than 4 pounds behind going in the last day, especially with the guys
on the river. You betcha.
You know, you'll take it. You'll deal with the stress to have the extra poundage. And I mean, I had Clifford Perch and Spencer Shuffield in second and third. I mean, two of the best fishermen in the country. They're absolute hammers. And, you know, I knew that I could not have a subpar day. I was really hoping I could go roll up another 20 pounds in the first few hours and feel great about it, have a stress-free day. And that's, of course, not how it worked. It started real slow. Slowest morning I had all week by far. You know, I didn't have a keeper bass for the first 2 hours. And at that point, I had close to 20 pounds in the live well the first 2 days at that point. So I knew the pressure was getting more intense. There's more and more people fishing the same areas. So I needed some momentum. I ran to an area, a little grass line that I had saved. And I caught a 3.25 pounder. And, you know, that fish wasn't going to win the tournament for me, but it got momentum on my side again. You know, at least got to turn the live wells on, got to put a fish in there. You got some weight. Let's move. Let's keep moving forward. And that really was a big difference maker for me. From that, it helped me settle down a little bit, and it came slow. I mean, we didn't just fill the live well right away, but through the next, for the rest of the day, we picked one off here and there, called a little bit, and, made our last call with about 15 minutes of fishing to go to get to about 18 pounds.
What was that weed line at? How deep was that first fish you got in the first one of the day?
Yeah, it was a little deeper. It was like a deeper weed line, but a shallower spot compared to the other stuff I was fishing. It was probably in 18 to 20 feet. The only fish I caught on a weed line all week. But again, it was something I found in practice. I saved it. I used it when I needed it. And again, it was just a momentum fish more than anything.
Well, you know, that's target fishing, what I was talking about before. You know, there's an area here. We've got some weed, maybe some rock on the end of it, and maybe a drop-off edge. Could be anything, but it's specific where, you know, that's where the fish should be. And, you know, if you've got enough of those, you can make a milk run and keep picking your fish off. And on the river, that's a significant thing. You've got to have, you know, little pieces of the puzzle. Because in the basin, you got a lot of sand and a lot of nothing out there that you've got to do a little homework on to find anything that's specific that you can target the fish on. You just can't, if you go down the bank, you can do fine. But 90% of the time, you're going to have a target to throw at.
You don't just find a school on that lake of 100 fish and catch them. You got to cobble it together off specific targets. I totally agree.
Josh, tell us about the weigh-in, because you had a lot of great anglers that were right on your tail. You'd had an average of 20 pounds almost for both days. You didn't think you did quite as well. How did that weigh-in go for you? How was it sitting on the hot seat?
Thankfully, it wasn't horribly stressful. It was stressful, trust me. But, really, Clifford had a slower day, unfortunately. So, you know, I knew that Cliff would probably fall back a few spots after talking to him. And then I was talking to Spencer, and Spencer weighs every one of his fish. So he knew exactly what he had. And, you know, we sat there and chatted, and not to keep the drama out of the actual weigh-in, but, I mean, I wanted to know. I said, how much do you think you have? And he said, dude, I got just under 21, which is a great bag. But he needed close to 23 to pass me with what I had. So I didn't know, but I wasn't biting my nails going crazy at the weigh tanks.
Oh, that's great. Well, you came in with a total of 61.73, and Spencer came in with 60.18, a great victory for you. Tell us, what did you take home from this for your efforts?
It's quite the payout, especially for what you put into this tournament. The entry fee that you pay is $1,600, and the winning purse is one of the best in all of fishing. I was lucky enough, I think, $75,000 for first, another few thousand dollars in big fish and big bag options, and then a Bass Cat Cougar and a Mercury four-stroke outboard. So, I mean, quite the package. It's valued at probably close to $150,000. And like I said, for what you put into it, pretty impressive payout from Billy and his crew.
Not bad for your first tournament on Lake Mojave. And I know that you can't do this without some great sponsors. Who were some of the people that were behind you that got you to this point?
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity to bring that up. I mean, I am very lucky. I've got some great support. I've had some sponsors that I've had around for 10, 12 years now. And, you know, really, I'll miss some of the ones, you know, especially got products that I use this week, Berkeley, Abu Garcia, Nitro Boats, Mercury Outboards, Garmin. The live scope was a really, really big factor. Hercules Tires, True Timber Fishing, Nines Eyewear, Hatch Toyota, Smoky Mountain Snuff. I've got a lot to list, but I'm really thankful for all of them.
You know, and we've really got to give kudos to One Bass and Billy Egan, because with the help of the Laughlin Chamber of Commerce, they put on one heck of an event.
They did amazing. I mean, the event was run so well. There's some places that are just built for tournament fishing, and Laughlin as a city, having Lake Mojave right there, having Catherine's Landing has got a beautiful 6-lane ramp, restaurant right there, a hotel right there, which we stayed at. They put us up. They were really great. You know, the whole thing, very similar to Lake Havasu, where they're perfect little tournament fishing cities. Everything you need is right there. Tons of places to eat, tons of stay, and then just an awesome, beautiful lake. So, I'm really excited, and it sounds like the city really enjoyed having the tournament there, and the tournament really, you know, all the anglers and the staff at One Bass really seemed to love it as well. So I think it's going to be a pretty good marriage moving forward there.
Well, Josh, on behalf of all of us here at Rod and Reel Radio, and I think all of, the Southwest fishing community, congratulations on your victory, and thank you for being with us. I hope we have the opportunity to talk to you again.
I would love to. Anytime, you've got my number, and tournament or no tournament, I'll come on and hang out with you all anytime.
John, can I give a little kudo to him? Yeah, I know we're probably running overtime, but
but go ahead.
So if you were watching Major League Fishing and you see Josh Bertrand, he's been on there, you know, and now you see him more and more and more. Take into consideration, as a tournament fisherman, I know that if I'm fishing against a group of guys, you got to beat 20 guys out of 100. And, you know, at 185, you got to beat 30 of them to win or get in the money line. If you're watching Major League Fishing, there's 80 guys out there that are trying to get into that top 8 or 10 or guys to compete in the last of the finals. You'll see the same guys over and over and over again, and Josh is one of the top 10 or top 20 guys you'll see rotate through that event on a regular basis. He's come to the point where he is one of the top fishermen in the world, and it's such a pleasure to have you on with us, Josh. I can't thank you enough.
Hey, you're gonna make me blush walking back into the house, Sam, but that means a lot, man. And I know that you've been there, done that on the tournament fishing scene, and you know a lot, man, so that means a ton coming from you. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Josh, for being with us. We'll keep track with you, and I know we'll be having you on again.
All right. Thank you all.
Hey, great. Hey, that was Josh Bertram. He's the winner of the One Bass 2022 U.S. Open at Lake Mojave. Hey, Stan, Wendy, and I, we're going to take a break right now, but coming up next, we're going to be talking to another bass champion, Christine Fisher, but she uses a little bit different method to go out and catch her fish. We're going to find out all about it. But first, these messages.
Turner's Outdoorsman, California's number one fishing, hunting, and shooting sports retailer, now has 28 locations. Turner's is your one-stop shop for fishing tackle, hunting gear, and everything for shooting sports. Turner's offers a full selection and unmatched prices on the gear you need. Whether you're planning a fishing trip with the family or chasing giant tuna, Turner's highly skilled staff will make sure you have the gear for your next adventure. Visit Turners.com to find a Turner's store near you, and be sure to join the Turner's Discount Club to get weekly ads and specials right to your inbox. Turner's Outdoorsman, your one-stop shop for all your fishing needs.
Since being established in 2015, CCA has achieved great success for the entire sport fishing industry in the fight for our right to fish here in California. 2021 brought us plenty of success, but every year brings new battles, and we need your help. One of the best ways to help support CCA Cal is to join us and become a member, because strength is certainly in our numbers. Become a member today by logging on to joincca.org. Membership starts at $35 per year, and that is one of the best ways to help us while you go fishing.
Hi, Roland Martin here. I'd like to tell you a little about Gary Yamamoto and the Gary Yamamoto Custom Bait Company. It all started with an idea, then a dream, and in 1983, the Gary Yamamoto Custom Bait Company was formed. If you know Gary Yamamoto like I do, and I've known him since 1983, you know he has a passionate love for the sport of fishing. That love is only matched by his obsession to design and produce the highest quality soft-plastic fishing lures on the market today. Every bait Gary makes is inspected by hand. Today, more than 2.5 million packages of bait are shipped worldwide. On behalf of Gary and his staff, he wants to thank his customers for thinking so highly of his products and wishing you the great success of the sport of fishing. Whether you fish for fun or fish a tournament circuit like I do, you'll honor Gary for making Gary Yamamoto Custom Baits a key part of your fishing experience. Take it from me, Roland Martin. When I'm in need of a go-to bait, my first choice is a Gary Yamamoto custom bait.
Hey, bass fishermen, who do you call for your bass boat insurance? Well, if you're not calling me at 1-800-BASS-BOAT for your boat insurance, you're probably paying too much and may not have the coverage that you need. In 1974, I developed the Bass Boat Program that is what all the pros use today. The reason? No depreciation or any partial claim for your hull, your big motor, your trolling motor, or your electronics until your boat's 10 years old. That's right, you only pay $250 to get your boat on the water for any partial claim, and we still pay a stated value replacement cost for your boat if you have a total loss. We're the only people in the industry that does that, and that's why we are the choice of the pros. So if you want the best, forget the rest. Just call 1-800-BASS-BOAT. Call 1-800-227-7262, or just spell Bass Boat. 1-800-BASS-BOAT. I know there's too many letters, but the T is free and the call's on me. That's 1-800-BASS-BOAT, the choice of the pros for bass boat insurance. For more information, log on to 1-800-BASS-BOAT.com.
Hi, this is Lori Heath. You may know me from some of the sports boats out of San Diego. I want to talk to you about something that's really close to my heart, the San Diego Blood Bank. Fishing for a way to make a difference in your community? Consider donating blood or making a financial donation to the San Diego Blood Bank. Your gift will impact medical research, revolutionize how we improve health and treat disease, and most importantly, give the gift of life. But we can't do it without you or without your help. Visit sandiegobloodbank.org to make an appointment or to give a financial donation today. It's the best way to give back. And just to let you know, I'm also a blood donor.
The warm weather is here and our lakes and rivers are brimming. Just remember, if you love California and you love to boat, please wear your life jacket. And make sure everyone with you puts one on too. Save the ones you love. A message from California State Parks Division of Boating and Waterways.
Dan Vandenberg, Wendy Toshihara, and myself, we want to welcome you back to the second hour of Rod and Reel Radio. Hey, this is indeed a night of champions for us. We just finished up the first hour talking to Josh Bertrand. He is the one, or is the winner of the 2022 One Bass U.S. Open Championships on Lake Mojave. And we're going to go right to another champion, this lady angler. Last year won the Hobie Kayak Open Tournament. She qualified for the World Championships. That's where we left her last year. Since then, she hasn't been letting any moss grow on her north side, but we're going to kind of catch up with what she's been doing since we last had her on. Let's welcome to Rod and Reel Radio, Christine Fisher. Christine, welcome to Rod and Reel Radio.
Hey, guys. It's been a little while.
Well, yeah. Christine, it isn't because we haven't been trying to get you on. You have been running around the country since we last had you.
I know. It's been the last, well, my life stays very, very, very busy, and it's been an even crazier last couple months for sure.
Well, let's do a little catch-up, if you will, at first. The last time we had you on, you had qualified for the World Championships. You won the Hobie Open to do that. Tell us a little bit about, you know, what it took to do that, because it isn't some easy task. You have to go through a gauntlet of tournaments to just qualify for the Open, and then I think you were fishing against 179 or so of some of the best kayak anglers in the United States. So take it from there, would you?
Yeah, sure. So, this was several years ago. To qualify for Hobie Worlds is pretty difficult to do. They've changed the criteria the last couple years. I've actually qualified three times now, which is incredible. The first year I qualified was the fishing the Open on Kentucky Lake. There's 130 anglers, I believe. I won that. This big tournament that I won last year was our tournament of champions that you have to qualify for. And even qualifying for it is extremely difficult. It is the top 50 anglers in the country that qualify for this big championship. And you either have to come in the top three of the opens to qualify, or you have to be in the top 20 of the Angler of the Year race. This is out of hundreds and hundreds of kayak anglers. So I've qualified for that tournament every single year, and I happened to actually win the Tournament of Champions last year. So I don't know if that's the one you're referring to, or the Kentucky Open 3 years ago when I first qualified, and then because of COVID, we didn't get to go to Worlds the last couple years, but now I've qualified three times. I've qualified through Angler of the Year points 2 years ago, and then by winning the big championship last year. And I finally got to go to Sweden in August of this year and compete in my Hobie Worlds and represent the country.
Well, tell us about that experience, because that's where we left you off. You didn't know where you were going to go. You were looking forward to doing it, and you had qualified by fishing bass events.
Can I ask a question first?
Go ahead, Stan.
Yeah, absolutely. You
know, a lot of the people don't understand a kayak. You got to row this thing, or you got to pedal it.
Well,
there's a couple of different versions.
You got to pedal it, with your feet. Or paddle.
You got to row or pedal. So you're confined to a distance because you got, you know, I don't know how far you would normally give yourself to go in any given tournament. How far do you travel when you start your first day, or do you pre-fish and you know how far you can go with that boat if you know where you're going? I assume you have to, they give you a lake and you can get there and you can pre-fish a little, but how far can you travel with that? And then how do you judge once you can go, I can go this far and then fish my way back, you know, because they're timed events also. It's not like you got a motor, you got to figure out what you're going to do ahead of time. So tell me how you work that out.
That's correct. So we do get a set practice period. Typically, I have about 3 days to practice. I have a pretty specific strategy with how I approach tournaments, but I'll just keep it short. You know, a lot of people, you're limited because you have to go as far as you can go. But I like to push that. And the way I fish and the way I think I've stay successful over the years, but I typically try to figure out the pattern, and as opposed to finding just like the best spot. I cover a ton of water. I look for water that fits that pattern. I spend a lot of days eliminating a lot of water and finding water that I can fish my confidence and fish the pattern that I found. And I'll cover anywhere from, you know, 6 or 7 to 10 to 15 miles for the tournament.
Wow, that's a long
running.
That's
that
a long
pattern.
Yeah, you know, and Christine, I guess let's bring to our listeners' attention. Unlike what we did with Josh Bertram, who had 3 days of fishing and he caught 61 pounds of smallmouth, your criteria for keeping track of your fish is a little different.
It is. Yep. We are similar to Bassmaster, where we take our best five, but what we do that is similar to MLF is that we do a catch photo release, not catch weigh release. So ours goes by your total length and your best five fish each day.
Okay. And typically on an event where you're fishing, what is the typical length that, you know, you'd want to really get to win a tournament or to be in contention?
I would say for most tournaments to win, and granted, there are some that take a lot more, especially in the spring, but for most tournaments, you're looking for like an 18-inch average, which is about a 3-pound average to do, you know, put you in the top three.
So how do you do that on a weigh-in when you're, you don't have a live well in your kayak? Maybe you do. I don't know.
It's a catch photo release. We don't go by weight. We go by total length.
Length.
There we go.
Yep. So we have pre-certified measuring boards with unique identifiers that we're given, plus an app we submit photos of the fish into. It's actually pretty complex. You don't just get to put a fish on the board and take a picture. The fish's mouth has to be closed. The tail has to be, you know, it's very, I mean, it's pretty specific in how they want the pictures. Your identifier has to be in the photo so that nobody can. It's really difficult to cheat. You actually, it's pretty tough to cheat in a kayak fishing tournament because it is just length. So
yeah, Wendy,
you know, you obviously.
Stan, usually on one of those catch photo and release tournaments, you're using like Fishing Chaos, some sort of fishing app. And there is, like she said, there's an identifier. So they'll give you like a code or a number and you put it, you have to put that or a token and you have to put that in each photo so they know that you're not cheating and it's for that specific day. So it's really easy to use once you get it, but you have to follow the rules and take the pictures exactly how they want them, or it can disqualify your fish.
Yep, that's absolutely true. You can get your fish disqualified or get deductions, and there's GPS and timestamps on all of the photos, so the tournament director knows exactly where you are, so you're in bounds and all these things.
All right. Well, Christine, when we left you off last, you had qualified for the World Championships. Tell us a little bit about how you have to prepare for that and what it's all about. I mean, do you have to disassemble your kayak and throw it on an airplane and bring it with you? Do they supply kayaks? And what is the format of the event where you're going and where did you go compared to fishing here in the United States?
So Hobie puts on a spectacular event over there. I think there were 16 countries that and 47 competitors, I believe, from these 16 countries over here in Amal, Sweden, on Lake Vänern. And Hobie provided each competitor the exact same Hobie fishing kayak with a Lowrance depth finder and a couple of specific, you know, measuring boards. And over there in Sweden, we would be targeting pike and perch, and it was your three best pike and your three best perch in a three-day tournament. So lucky for me, I grew up fishing for pike and perch. That, you know, I did that way more than I bass fish. I feel like it was almost second nature, and I think that really helped me out because I placed fifth over there, which is pretty incredible.
Wow, that's great.
Oh, my gosh. How many competitors were in that event, Christine?
I believe 47 or 48.
Wow. When it came to choice of lures and equipment, much different than what you were using here? Because I know, you know, we fish perch, let's say, in the High Sierras for perch up there. And we don't get a chance to fish a lot of walleye, but I know you can use a lot of the same lures that you use for bass. Tell us about your lure and your gear selection.
So for the perch, I ended up doing the best on actually drop shot, on a big drop shot worm, and then about a 3.3-inch swim bait on a tungsten round ball jig head. I found a bunch of schools of perch, big perch, suspended in, you know, 100 foot of water, and I just slow roll that swim bait over the top of them, and that's how I would catch the perch. And the other species was northern pike, and I brought over some of my musky swim baits. So I was throwing like a 12-inch perch-colored swim bait for the pike.
Really?
You know, fishing in a world championship like that and being a champion from the United States and fishing against champions from all over the world, were you kind of an anomaly being a woman, or did you find that there were a lot of women from around the world that were in the same position you were?
No, definitely probably the anomaly. I'm the only female that's ever actually qualified through winning a competition for Worlds. There were two other women there, and with the way Worlds works with other countries, they extend invites, and so they happen to invite two women to come, but I'm the only one that qualified through winning a championship.
Wow. So I got a question with your pike baits. You're fishing, obviously, you got the bigger pike here in America. I don't know how big you're fishing for over in Sweden, but with
they're
the 12-inch bait.
They grow much larger over in Europe.
Really? So with a 12-inch
bait, you've
got a kayak.
From Europe.
In a kayak, you know, when we were lobbing the lumber for the largemouth bass and you've got these bigger baits that you're chucking a long way with, you know, 20-pound string. That's one thing to be in a bass boat, but in a kayak,
an 8-foot rod may not be what you throw that with. What are you using, and your what kind of gear are you throwing that on, and what pound line?
Oh, the exact same that any other you would in a boat. I have a 9.6. I have a 8.6 X heavy, and I've got an 8-foot. I do a lot of musky fishing from the kayak, and I actually, a lot of people make the assumption that kayak anglers want shorter rods, and the only time I ever want a shorter rod is if I'm fishing real close quarters, and I'd probably want the same if I were in a bass boat, you know, skipping docks real close quarters or fishing in smaller creeks and stuff. I like having a little shorter rod, but now I brought my 9.6 and my 8.6 and my 8-foot and about 65 to 80-pound mainline braid with a 80 to 100-pound fluoro leader for the pike stuff.
Wow. So in that Hobie, can you stand up and throw that?
I stand up about 100% of the time. Yep. I don't like to sit. It'd be really tough to sit down and fish those baits.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. I go, you know, how do you do that in a kayak? Because there's a lot of guys that fish ocean kayaks. They sit down most of the time. But, mm-hmm. you know, throwing an 8-foot stick, I don't know how you do that sitting down. So that's impressive that you won. You've got that. How long is your kayak, too? That's a long stick.
About 14 feet.
Okay. That would make sense.
Well, coming on back from the World Championships, did you find that you picked up a lot of notoriety from this, and that maybe sponsors' doors that you were knocking on before this event that weren't open to you, that maybe you found a little crack in the doorway when you came back?
Well, I don't know about that. I'm pretty booked up with sponsors, and I guess I don't really know how to say. No, I mean, not really. I haven't really been doing any searching for sponsors lately. I guess in terms of the notoriety from Worlds, yeah, it was definitely a really, really big deal and pretty exciting. And I got the sponsors that I currently have were pretty happy with my performance over there. So that's always good. You know, you want to keep them happy.
Wow. Now,
imagine they wouldn't be,
you know, we don't want to leave people with the impression that when you're traveling the United States in these tournaments, that you're doing local events or even type of regional events. The events that you're fishing with are literally taking you all over the United States, and you log quite a few miles in order to get from each event. So where is your home base, and where are some of the places that these tournaments now are taking you, Christine?
Sure. Well, I've pretty much been on the road full time, but I kind of call home base Tennessee. That's about the closest to most of my tournaments. But this year I've got fishing licenses for tournaments in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Texas, Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, Tennessee, Mississippi. Goodness. I mean, just all over. Michigan was one of them. New York. I think you get the picture. It's all over the place.
So being from Tennessee, there wasn't any celebration in your community this week when the Tennessee Volunteers had the victory that they had in the football game this weekend.
So I'm actually from Nebraska. I'm building a place in Tennessee right now. I don't actually have it built yet, but I pretty much call that area my home base because I have a storage unit there. So no, I'm not a Vols fan. I'm a Huskers fan. I hate admitting that on the radio because the Huskers have obviously been first for the last 20 years, but I did actually watch the Vols game, and that, I mean, I was definitely a Vols fan yesterday for sure.
There you go.
That was great. Just like a lot of most of the United States outside of Los Angeles are now Padre fans for sure. Hey,
yep.
Guys, Christine, can we ask you to stay a little bit longer? Because we want to find out what you do in this series right now, because I think you're also finding some success, and we need to know about that. Can we get you to stay with us a little longer?
Sure thing.
Hey, we're speaking with kayak champion Christine Fisher, and we're going to find out what she is doing this year to try and make it again to the Hobie Open Championships and maybe another trip to the World Championships. So stay tuned. Stan, Wendy, and I will be back after these messages.
Hi, this is Jim Trelekas. Whether you're an avid angler or custom rod builder like me, you need to team up with the leading innovator in rod building related products, Batson Enterprises. From rain shadow rod blanks, engineered by anglers for anglers, to quality rod components supplied by Alps and Forecast, Batson Enterprises will enhance the quality of your fishing and rod building experience. Batson Enterprises for many years has excelled in incorporating rod building technologies and techniques into every product sold. Owner Bill Batson has assembled one of the finest group of in-house professionals to assist you with your every rod building question or need. So take it from me, Jim Trelekas. When my customer's expectation is for me to build them the finest fishing rod their money can buy, I turn to Batson Enterprises for the best rod components my money can buy.
Hi, this is John, and I'd like to invite you to the new Angler's Arsenal location in Lakeside, California. We've put together a staff of experts that'll help you find the tackle and gear you need at a price you can afford. We carry all major brands, and if you need custom work done, we can do that for you with both rods and reels. How about servicing your old equipment? No problem. We can do it quickly, easily, at a price you can afford. We also do custom hand-poured plastics through Western Plastics. Design the lure of your dreams and catch the fish that have been getting away. So come and visit us in Lakeside. We're at 12255 Woodside Avenue. Or you can visit us at anglersarsenal.com. If you need to call us, we're at 619-466-8355. See you there.
Every serious angler knows that a quality hook is an important part of their arsenal. Gamakatsu hooks are made from high-grade carbon steel specially heat-treated to make them light and extra strong but not brittle. Gamakatsu ring hooks are made with a one-piece ring, no welds, no weak spots, a very smooth-moving ring. Gamakatsu offers a huge variety of hooks for all types of fishing. Live bait hooks, both light and heavy-duty to four extra strong. Circle hooks, tuna hooks, ringed hooks, tuna doubles, and many more. Don't waste your next fishing trip on a cheap hook. Get Gamakatsu hooks at your favorite tackle store now.
I can't wait to spend some quality time with my son fishing this year, teaching him about casting, how to choose bait, set the hook, and how to be safe on the water by always wearing a life jacket. Save the ones you love. A message from California State Parks Division of Boating and Waterways.
Are you looking for a quality fishing experience out of Cabo San Lucas for you, your family, and friends, but are a little set back with what charter company to choose? We urge you to use American and family-owned Lands End Charters. Lands End Charters offers their passengers affordable and all-inclusive services on a variety of vessels and trips. Fish with the latest of fishing gear while experiencing the hospitality of a long-time-owned family business. Go to lensandcharters.com to see all of their vessels and amenities available. Call Cobble, Greg, or Jenny at 800-281-5778 when you're ready for an action-packed Cabo fishing experience.
Hey, everybody. This is a message for our listeners from a new Baja Magic Lodge at Cedros Island. Cedros Outdoor Adventures wants to make your dream of fishing Cedros Island a reality. Want to go after giant calicos or yellowtail with the best Cedros Island fishing organization, but you just don't know who to contact? Then give Cedros Outdoor Adventures a call at 619-793-5419, or even better yet, log on to their informative website at cedrosoutdooradventures.com. There you can visit their trip calendar and schedule a trip that's convenient for you. Once again, the phone number is 619-793-5419. Or their website of CedrosOutdoorAdventures.com.
Rod and Reel Radio is brought to you by BajaBound.com Insurance Services. Are you driving to Mexico? You can buy and print out your Mexican auto insurance policy online in the convenience of your own home or office in minutes now with BajaBound.com's easy-to-use website. After printing your auto insurance, check out the BajaBound.com site. There, too, you will find great travel tips and information to help you get the most out of your next road trip south of the border. So this is an important fact to remember. Use BajaBound.com. It's the easiest way to find and get Mexican auto insurance.
Hey, Stan, Wendy, and I, we want to welcome you back to Rod and Reel Radio. This show is dedicated to fishing champions, and in the second hour of the show, we're speaking with Christine Fisher, and she is a kayak fishing champion fishing the Hobie Kayak Series around the United States. Christine, welcome again to the show.
Thanks, guys. It's good to be here again.
Hey, it is great to have you with us. Well, needless to say, 2021 was a great year for you. You qualified not only to go to the Open Championships, but then also you got a spot in the World Championships. But that was then. This is now. Tell us a little bit, how are you doing this year, especially fishing in the Hobie Bass Open Series, trying to get to the Open again and hopefully another spot to the World Championships?
This year has been one of my better years, consistency-wise and cash and checks-wise. I'm currently sitting in second place for Angler of the Year, the Angler of the Year race and the Hobie Bass Open Series, which I'm pretty stoked about. I just got a top three in the Bassmaster Kayak Series on Lake Pickwick last week. And I've done really, really well on the other national trail. I think I've cashed about 10 or 11 checks already this season and had several top threes out of 200 angler fields. So I feel, guys, I mean, it's just kind of crazy. I feel super fortunate this year to be having another really good year.
Wow. So I got a question for you here. As a tournament guy, you spend a lot of time. If you're going to really get into that pre-fishing, do you know the lakes you're going to fish ahead of time? And is there any rule about getting there, going to the lake and doing like a, I'm thinking I'd put the kayak on the top of my boat and have a bass boat behind the truck, and I'd go out and run around the lake and find what I could find so that I could go there and do a little homework once you find that type of area with a kayak? Or can you do that kind of thing? Or do you just take the kayak? Is it on a trailer, or you put it on your car and then just put it in and go find your situations you're going to fish?
Yep. We can't use a bass boat to do any of our practice unless it's like a month out. But I don't do that. I think that's kind of a disingenuous kind of, it doesn't really seem like it belongs in a kayak fishing tournament, but there are people that do it, and there's nothing, it's not against the rules, but I think there's like a 30 or 60 day. I should probably know this, but again, I don't have a bass boat, so I don't need to really pay attention to that rule. I think it's either a month or two. You can't be in a bass boat on that lake. That's kind of a ban. You have to do everything on your kayak. That's what I do. I do a lot of map study ahead of time and select some areas. Some of the lakes I'm familiar with and some of them I've never fished before, but I always go and check history. But I publish every single one of my tournament recaps on my YouTube channel, and I've found that in doing that, I mean, it's great for my YouTube channel, but also it tells people pretty much where I'm being very successful, and I've seen a lot of people fish in my old history. So I have to, it challenges me to find new water each time I visit a lake that I'm very familiar with. So I spend a lot of time driving around looking at things, and then I spend a lot of time on the water. Like I said, I just mentioned, I just got off the water about an hour ago. I'm fishing for a huge championship on Kentucky Lake, and I just grabbed myself a motel on the Tennessee River, and I'm eating a pizza here talking with you fine gentlemen this evening.
Sounds like my kind of tournament. Do you have a strength that you like to fish, a particular style and, you know, baits that you, maybe two or three things you, especially in the U.S.? Yeah, I mean, going to Sweden and fishing perch and pike is a different thing, but here fishing the bass tournaments, do you have a strength that you kind of continually rely on for your style of fishing?
Yeah, for sure. Typically, most of my tournaments that I do really well in, I'm a shallow water power fisherman. I do a lot of flipping. I do a lot of moving baits. I also read current very well. I fish the tail race if that presents itself. Love fishing current and current breaks with big swim baits and big one-out spinner baits. I always seem to be able to find them and catch them doing that. So moving water is one of my specialties. But then again, just I usually do a pretty good job at figuring out what the pattern is and being able to kind of run that. And, you know, that's all about making better casts than everybody else and hitting the right stuff at the right time and covering a lot of water and finding those active shallow fish. And that's what I usually try to find. If the lakes have grass, I love fishing around grass, punching grass, flipping grass. Some of my favorite stuff to do also.
Wow. Not what you would normally hear from a kayak fisherman, by the way.
No, it's not?
No, most kayak fishermen, they're not actively punching. You might explain what punching is, because a lot of our listeners may not understand punching, where you're fishing shallow water weed beds, and you're standing up on a kayak, but you're actually using a flipping stick to pitch in with heavier weight.
Yep, like a 1 or 2 ounce weight, punching the mat. So you're having the weight go through the mat and working it there. A lot of kayak anglers I know, at least the Fish R series, do a lot of punching. A lot of them do, actually. That's how you get a lot of those bigger bites on some of these lakes on certain times of the year. That's what it is. And I know a lot of the successful ones do that quite a bit.
Christine, you have to be very fastidious about your tackle. Christine, you have to be very fastidious about your tackle selection. You know, when we're talking to bass anglers, most of them have the capability of keeping enough tackle in their boat. It would make any tackle store envious. But in your case, you have a certain economy that you have to watch out, because not only you need place for your tackle, you need place for your rods. Obviously, you have to, keep yourself contained with water and food and stuff like that. So how do you go about selecting what tackle you're going to take, and for that matter, how much of it?
Well, I don't feel too terribly restricted in the amount of tackle or rods I can take. I said my kayak's pretty good size. It's, one of the more popular tournament kayaks out there. And I take anywhere from 14 to 16 rods with me at all times. I have all of my terminal tackle, all of my swim bait stuff. I've got plenty of plastics in my backstock. You can utilize the storage under your seat. I've got a huge crate that sits behind me that I've got about 8 Plano Edge boxes in. And then I've got a couple more Plano Edge boxes on the side under my seat. I have a 100-amp battery that sits right behind me for my Garmin LiveScope. I have 2 106 SVs on my kayak. I don't really feel like I'm too terribly limited. Sometimes I wish I could take just a little bit more, but then, it's almost like you have too much and you're second-guessing yourself. So I feel like I haven't really been presented a situation yet where I feel like, gosh, I wish I would have had room for, 2 or 3 more rods or more tackle. If I do get to that, I can always make like a couple grab-and-go, grab-and-go boxes of stuff. But for the most part, for what I'm doing, I haven't really encountered that just yet, if that makes sense.
Sure enough. Do you use different kayaks going to different events, or do you have one standard kayak that you're hauling around to all these different tournaments?
I pretty much use my my Hobie Pro Angler. It's the about the the kind of the Cadillac of the kayak fishing stuff. I love that boat. I use that predominantly in my tournaments. But if we did have one tournament on the Susquehanna River this year, and I actually that's one where I downsized my stuff like you wouldn't believe. But it's river fishing. You can keep it very simple if you really only need 3 or 4 rods total. And that's what I took. I took a crate, 3 or 4 rods, and 2 boxes of mix and match, just grab and go stuff, and fished on an inflatable Hobie kayak. Still with the
what
drive.
What are the 3 or 4 rods?
My feet, but what's that?
So what are the 3 or 4 rods you would do for that style fishing?
For the Susquehanna River, are you guys familiar with that river at all?
Only not that we fished it, but we've seen other tournament people that have been on the river.
Perfect. So yeah, you all know they're big, eerie built smallmouth. I mean, huge smallmouth. It's an extremely shallow river. So my four rods that I had, and the Susquehanna, every national tournament I fish there, I've cut a check. I've got sixth, and this year I got eighth. So I've done really, really well out there, and it really suits my strengths. It's a shallow water power fishing for giant smallmouth. I had a buzz bait rigged up. I had a wake bait rigged up. I had a swim bait, and then I had a finesse jig on a spinning rod. And that was it.
Well, you know, Christine, in the past couple of years in the bass fishing world and the bass boats, we have seen an explosion in the sophistication in the electronics that these fishermen are putting on their boat. Is mm-hmm. Hobie adapting the same way, or are you finding the manufacturers? Is there a big change in the electronics that you're using over the electronics you were using, let's say, two seasons ago?
Oh, yeah. I mean, most people that I'm competing against in the big national kayak trails all have live scope or some sort of forward-facing sonar, including myself. I have it also. So, you know, that's pretty standard now in our trails. You know, a lot of them, Bassmaster and KBF allow motors, so we can use motors in our tournaments. Some guys go with the spot lock Minn Kota option. Others go with a little electric outboard. It's pretty crazy how much, you know, a lot of people think kayak fishing, and I don't think they realize, you know, what, I guess like the recreational kayak fishing is very, very different than what I do and what these tournament trails look like. I mean, they look like little mini bass boats, you know, it's kind of crazy.
It is when it comes though to, putting on a motor, and obviously you need batteries and stuff like that. Has, again, mm-hmm. Hobie adapted to the fact that you can put motors, batteries in these things? You have brackets for small motors. Tell us how that's evolved.
Yeah, so Hobie has accessories for that you can get, you know, to do those things. They do have a motor that goes in the drive well. Old Town came out with the Autopilot, which is a spot lock kayak. I think that kayak manufacturers are starting to try to get ahead of the game, if you will, and you know, find ways that their holes are more motor friendly or motor ready. And for the most part, you know, a lot of them are there. So it's going to be really cool to see, you know, the evolution in the next couple of years and what happens with this as well.
You know, and it's hard for me to picture that you're taking a deep cycle, you know, lead cell battery that it weighs, you know, 65 pounds and trying to place it in a kayak somewhere. Has the advent of the lithium batteries helped you out? And is that something that you're going to now?
Oh, gosh, yeah. Lithium. I've been running lithium for years, and that's the only way to go. Like I said, I've got 100-amp Dakota lithium that I run that powers both of my Garmin units. I don't want to speak for everybody, but I think most of the kayak anglers out there are all using lithium. That's kind of a no-brainer when it comes to the kayaks, because just what you said, we can't have, you know, having a huge 50, 60-pound battery. That would not be good at all. So, yeah, I've been running lithium for quite a while now.
Well, then, do you have then a combination of battery power and then also pedal power so that, let's say, if you're working a particular piece of structure, that you mm-hmm. can kindly gently work around it with pedal power, but when you got to go from point A to point B, you're on the motor?
Yep, you said it. I have a Torquedo 1103. That thing goes, you know, about 6.5 miles an hour. So nothing crazy, but it, you know, pretty fast on the kayak. That's what I use to get, you know, from point A to point B in the tournaments that allow for it. Or if I'm pre-fishing for the Hobie series that doesn't allow motors, that Torquedo helps me eliminate tons of water in practice. I literally just run a lot of water because I don't actually do a lot of fishing in practice. That sounds kind of weird, but I don't really do much fishing. I do a lot of looking. So yes. And then I use my pedal drive system when I'm there, to maintain position or just, you know, maneuver around.
Now, you know, Christine, this seems crazy, but in bass fishing tournaments, fishermen are required to have kill switches because they can get in situations where maybe they can be thrown out of the boat. And I saw that you were in a situation where a kill switch might have helped out a little bit. Are kill switches mandatory in your fishing events? And tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I believe they are. And I have one on that motor, but, you know, I was, you know, definitely being a little ignorant and just playing around with friends, and I wasn't wearing my kill switch for that little fun outing up north. And yeah, that was pretty comical. Thank goodness it wasn't dangerous, and we were on a lake that there was nobody on, because yeah, I was trying to catch a frisbee my friend overthrew, and I jumped up and fell off the kayak, and my kayak kept going on without me at 6.5 miles an hour.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
6.5 miles an hour.
It was pretty funny.
You know, there are times if fishermen do get thrown out of the boat that the boat will go in a circular pattern. Do you find the same thing happens with a kayak?
Yep. That's how we got mine. Finally, it was going in circles, about 5 or 6 circles before one of us could grab it and pull the kill switch.
Wow. Now, you just finished a big tournament on Pickwick. You came in second.
Yep.
That's great. You're fishing the Hobie Bass Open Series. Has that tournament series, is that concluded? Do you still have more events to go before you qualify for the Open? Just where are you now in the standings?
The Hobie Bass Open Series, the final event was on Dardanelle. So it's wrapped up. That's the one that I'm sitting second in Angler of the Year points. So I already qualified for the Tournament of Champions, which is that big, big, big tournament. I think this year the winner gets $50,000, I believe. Last year I got $35,000 for winning it. Nice little bonus there at the end of the year. But yeah, the way you qualify for that is you have to place in the top three at one of the opens. And almost all of the opens for Hobie capped out at 200 anglers. And I have a second, a third, third, seventh, eighth, and 13th, I believe. So I had an incredible year in the Hobie Series, which is why I'm sitting in second place for Angler of the Year. So I actually qualified for the Tournament of Champions like three different ways this year, which is awesome.
Well, you know, whoever's in front of you, I got to tell you, whoever's in front of you with that kind of a record, is how far in front of you are they? It can't be that many points.
Yeah, just two. Just 2 points. But this guy has won several Angler of the Year titles. He came from fishing I think he was got to be one of the youngest FLW anglers. He's from Arkansas and is by far one of our best anglers, like in the entire kayak fishing sport. He's incredible. Good friend of mine. And I feel pretty honored to be just 2 points behind him. But our championship is on Caddo in the fall, here in November, and he is very good on Caddo. I've done very well on Caddo also, but he is not going to be easy to take down on Caddo.
So what's his name?
Cody Milton.
Oh, okay. So we can follow you guys online and watch the competition. I think, you know, going into Angler of the Year this last year, or year before last, whatever it was, I was tied. You're 2 points behind. I was tied for Angler of the Year with a guy going into the last tournament with his toughest nails. And I ended up taking the title down, beat him by four other people.
Wow. So awesome.
You know, that stuff can happen. And I've been following your tournament trail here, watching on Facebook and whatever while you're going through this stuff. It's fun to watch. But you still get the shot at it here because you don't know, you know, is it a 1 day or 2 day event?
Our championships are actually 3 days.
Even better. I think you got a shot at it, girl.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
I'm gonna need all the good luck and well wishes, because I've got several guys right behind me on my heels that are incredible anglers, and one of them's actually from California and caught a lot of checks in the Bass Opens out in California when they used to be out there. We've got a lot of guys that that were ex-bass boat tournament anglers that are fishing our kayak stuff now and killing it. So it's awesome. Very competitive.
Where is the Hobie Open Championship going to be this year, Christine?
Caddo Lake down in Louisiana, Texas.
Wow. And is the lake you're familiar with? How do you feel about that lake? You must feel good because I've got to imagine if it's down in Louisiana, it's got to be a shallow lake.
It is. Yeah. The big cypress, a lot of cypress trees and a lot of grass. And I cut a check on Caddo in the spring. I fished Caddo in the spring twice. I've never fished it in the fall. So it'll definitely, you know, in the spring, those fish get up on those cypress trees. They don't really relate to the cypress trees in the fall. So it'll be really interesting to figure out, you know, if you can pattern them for 3 days and get on them. So I'm really excited. It's a gorgeous lake. And it's got a lot of really big fish. So I'm definitely, it's going to be a lot more fun than fishing Kentucky Lake where I am right now fishing for this championship. I'll tell you that right now.
Christina, in the couple of minutes that we have left with you, you mentioned that you've got some sponsors. Who are some of the people that are helping you get to where you are right now?
Oh, boy. You guys put me on the spot here. I've been on the water since about 6 a.m., so my brain's kind of fried. But, yes, Abu Garcia, Fenwick, Berkeley, those guys are, you know, incredible. Love all their stuff. AFCO, Garmin, Yeti, Hobie, Great Out, or 10 Cup Whiskey, Great Outdoors Coffee Co., Outdoor America, Dakota Lithium. Those are some of the companies that, you know, I definitely couldn't do what I do without them. I'm super thankful to have them and to have everybody's support. I feel pretty dang fortunate. I know I'm probably forgetting some, but I think that's
When you're fishing a Hobie product, after a tournament, or if you find out that, hey, this part or this thing has to be tweaked, do you get back to Hobie and do they listen to you and make those changes?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have a great communication with all of my sponsors. That's a prerequisite for me to, you know, be able to have that communication, that line of contact there. And, yeah, but there's something that, you know, I want to see change, or I like to voice my, you know, voice my opinion there, and I'm in the kayak a lot, and they take that to heart, and I love that. It's a really mutually beneficial thing, and it's good to know that you're heard by the people you're working for.
Great. Well, Christine, I can't tell you how much we appreciate having you on, and I hope to have you on again here real soon, especially to find out how you do in the championships, and if you can, again, qualify for that world championship. You've got to be excited about that for sure.
Most definitely. Yeah. Finally being able to go to Worlds and experience it and meet all the other competitors, the best fishermen all over the world, was such a humbling thing. And I hope I can qualify every year. It's not going to be easy, but that's always my goal.
All right. Christine, I can't thank you enough for being with us on behalf of all of us here at the radio show and all of our listeners. We wish you much success. And again, we hope to be talking to you again real soon.
I appreciate you guys. Always a pleasure. And thanks so much for having me on the show again.
All right. Thank you very much, Christine Fisher. You know, Stan and Wendy, isn't it great not only being able to talk to a champion like that, but also know that it's a lady championship that is doing well in an environment that is dominated by a lot of men?
Well, yeah, you know, she's done a great job. And like I said earlier off the air, fish don't know whether the angler's male or female. She's just doing an awesome job.
The fact that she's as consistent as she is across the board, and this is, she went overseas and can compete over there too. She has got talent coming out her ears, which is really cool. And I don't care who you are as a fisherman, you know, putting two and two together to come up with four in your tournaments and putting five fish in the boat or whatever you got to do. In her case, it's, you know, you got to take a picture and weigh them
instead of weigh them rather. And that type of environment where you just got to produce fish after fish after fish after fish to continually be in the hunt, she has done a great, great job. That's no easy task. I don't care who you are. So like Wendy said, the fish don't know who you are. The fish just react to the bait you're putting in front of them and how your presentation is. And she has done a phenomenal job about that.
All right, everyone, that's it for tonight. We'll see you next Sunday night for another live show on Rod and Reel Radio, starting on AM 540 at 5:05 p.m. Pacific Time. So on behalf of Israel and the AM 540 studios, Ben Harvey, our local producer, and always in memory of Big Tuna Bill, Eddie McCune, who started this show, Mr. Paul Leader, that helped us stay on the show from Elkhorn Ford. We wish you good night. Go out there and go fishing, because if you're not, someone else is catching your fish or you're letting them get away. So until next Sunday night, good night, everyone. We'll see you next week.
You ain't working anymore.
Could be.
There's your hole out in the sun.